This is Politics on Parade here on the Jeff Booth Show, brought to you by the Center for Sexual Expression and Education and Erotic University. Now, there's some big stories this week. The top story is the Zubik v. Burwell case that went before the Supreme Court yesterday. That's the case where the Little Sisters of the Poor are suing because they think that filling out a form and sending it into the government infringes on their rights to religious freedom. This is a follow-up to what was probably one of the worst Supreme Court decisions in the history of the court. It's not a terrible decision, and there's a lot of really bad Supreme Court decisions, but this is up there with the worst. Not just because it makes absolutely no sense that you should be able to say that one person's religious freedom should supersede other people's rights who don't believe in that religion. Yes, that was terrible and nonsensical, but it's also because it was so badly decided that it allowed for cases like this one now to appear before the court. Now, why did they do this so badly? It was not incompetence. It's part of this court's, the Roberts court's, primary tactic. Yes, they want to do extreme things and make extreme changes to this country, but they don't want to do it all in one big bite. The way they approach this stuff is very incremental. If you chip away at people's rights, they don't notice they're gone. They've been doing this with abortion, basically allowing it to be legislated out of existence, but slowly, not all at once. And I believe that's the same tactic they were doing here. First, they allowed Hobby Lobby to not give contraceptive access to their own employees, which makes absolutely no sense because they're not a religious group. But their argument was, well, there are alternative ways for the government to facilitate providing women with contraceptive access through their insurance. But they didn't specify that. And they didn't make it clear exactly what was legal. And so here we have the Little Sisters of the Poor suing, saying that the government's worked out solution, all you have to do is fill out a form and tell us that this violates your religious beliefs, we'll pass it off to the insurance company, and they'll take care of it. You don't have to do anything. Well, the Little Sisters of the Poor say, that's too much. And now we can see clearly, as this goes before the court, that probably four of the justices agree with that. So it wasn't just a coincidence that they did this so badly. They didn't bungle it. It's part of a strategy. So even though, when this court case in Hobby Lobby was decided, they go, oh, the government has ways to do this, the government came up with a way to do that that makes absolute sense, and it is looking pretty much like, with Kennedy included, four justices are going to say, no, you can't use this method. Now, we won't see the actual decision until July, but court watchers, court experts, after watching the way Kennedy handled himself and the questions he asked, they believe that it's going to be a 4-4 decision. But what does that mean? We actually don't know, because this is a complicated issue. We could be talking about companies that have different constitutional obligations depending upon what state one of the divisions of their company is. The last appeals court found in favor of the Little Sisters of the Poor. So a 4-4 tie means that decision stands. But what we won't know, and maybe even for quite a while after the decision, is where does this apply? What companies does this apply to? An incomplete court creates this kind of complexity and uncertainty and craziness. Now, on the plus side, Scalia would have almost certainly made it a 5-4 decision in favor of allowing businesses to deny their employees access to contraceptive care. Look at this court. This will be decided by four male Catholics who do not believe that women should have access to contraception at all. Before Scalia died, they almost certainly would have tried to apply their religious beliefs to the entire nation. Now, these four men are going to apply their religious beliefs to just a part of the nation, but we don't exactly know what part. The other big story took place in the state of Alabama. Now, Alabama is in the news on a regular basis for a lot of the craziness that goes on there. They've got their Chief Justice Roy Moore, who has been fighting tooth and nail against gay marriage. And as over the top as he is, as much of a theocrat as he is, he's not the most extreme person on the Alabama Supreme Court. So I got a crazy Supreme Court. But now it's the governor who is embroiled in controversy. And as you might expect for Alabama, he is a family values guy, extremely anti-gay, anti-gay marriage. And while if he had any say about whether gay people could get married or not, he would certainly deny them that right, he actually doesn't do marriage himself very well. His wife has filed for divorce back in August as rumors were flying about an affair with the governor. Well, now that story has broken wide open, thanks to a series of remarkable events. And at the center of these events is a man named Spencer Collier. He was the head of the Alabama Law Enforcement Agency. So let's back up a little bit, back to August, when Governor Robert Bentley was at a business conference, and he dropped his phone. The law enforcement official, who was acting as his bodyguard, happened to be there. He saw the phone, and he saw a text message of a sexual nature from the woman that many suspected that Bentley was having an affair with. So he reported it to his boss, who was Spencer Collier, a close friend of Governor Robert Bentley. And remember, at this time, Bentley's going through a divorce. What happens next? A family member who is unnamed turns over a recording that is apparently between Rebecca Caldwell Mason, his chief advisor, and Bentley. So Collier goes to the governor and he says, look, this affair has to stop. It's going to ruin you. And if there's any commingling of state property or state money that's going to her, you'd be committing a felony. Well, the friendship soured after that. He put Collier on medical leave in February because Collier broke the governor's orders when he told him don't get involved in a court battle between state prosecutors and lawyers for Alabama's state House Speaker. Now, that House Speaker was indicted on corruption charges. But it would have been Collier's job to get involved with that. And now, the governor has fired Collier. And here's where it gets really bizarre. The law enforcement agency who initially saw that text message was given Collier's job. And now he claims, no, I never saw any text message. And now he's investigating Collier, claiming there were a number of concerns, including the possible misuse of funds. But he's talking about Collier, not Bentley. Now, on the other side, Collier did a press conference where he said, yes, the governor has revealed to me that he had an affair and he couldn't quit, and that he believes there needs to be investigations of Bentley. And it was at that press conference that his whole affair story broke out. Now, the governor knew that that recording was out there, and he held a press conference, one of the most bizarre press conferences I have ever watched. He claims he never had an affair. There was no sexual relationship between him and this woman. But he refuses to answer a lot of questions, and it's clear he's trying to figure out what he can get away with saying, what he has to admit, what he can lie about. It's obvious that he's being completely disingenuous. And what he doesn't apparently realize at the time is that the press has a copy of the recording, and they make it public. And it is very clear from this recording, which at the press conference, where he says, you know, I apologize for things I've done wrong, but I'm not going to tell you what I did wrong, and basically admitting that there's a recording. Well, now he's admitted that the recording exists, and we hear the recording. His idea of what isn't a sexual relationship is very bizarre, because he's talking about coming up behind her and grabbing her breasts, and if we do what we did last night, we better make sure we lock the doors. It's clear he's having an affair. If you listen to the tape, there is no doubt in your mind that he's having an affair. But this governor still thinks that he's going to be able to hold on to his job. And here's the kicker. This is a governor who pushed through legislation that disallowed any city or county from increasing the minimum wage. At the same time, he gave massive increases to the people who worked for him in a state that's having rather extreme financial difficulties, but no one knows where the money that he is paying his alleged mistress, his number one advisor, no one knows where the money to pay her is coming from. And she gets paid a very, very large salary. There's all sorts of other things swirling around. This governor is done, and it was amazing to watch a man who's so clueless. It's over for him. It looks like a guy who will continue to fight. But there will be investigations, and it seems like there may be a whole bunch of other things that he has done that won't pass the smell test. If he were to resign immediately, yeah, he might survive. But if he tries to hold on with all the investigations that are going to take place, it is going to go very, very badly for him.